Welcome to Motivated to Lead Podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're happy to have with us Robert Swan. Robert is a polar pioneer. He is the first person that walked to both the North and the South Pole. He is awarded the Polar Medal by Queen Elizabeth, and he has just an incredible life story, and he's a internationally known speaker and speaks on the subject of leadership, and he has some great life lessons that he's going to share with us. He has a couple TED Talks also that please check out, and looking forward to today's conversation with Robert. Well, Robert, we were introduced not too long ago. A CEO, person I know, has out in California introduced me to you and said that you'd come in and given a talk to his team, and he said some great things about you. And I think you're the first person with, and I'm not sure exactly what title to give you. So when you're at a dinner party, when they ask you, what do you do, what's your reply?
Well, I would say probably a rather facetious reply would be that I'm the first person in history, which I am, but I'd add in the word stupid enough to walk to the North and South Poles. I would imagine that's how I would introduce myself.
Well, talk about, and we're going to go through kind of your journey. And we talked earlier and we said your story is in different acts. You know, if you look at a play, you have different acts and scenes. And for those that are typically listening to this podcast, we also are going to be sharing some photos throughout this talk today and our conversation. So definitely check out our website for the video version as well as our YouTube channel to see, get the full impact. And a picture is worth a thousand words. And so we definitely want to share those today. But start back kind of at the beginning. We've got a great picture of you at 11 years old. Talk a little bit about your journey as you started out.
I think that picture of me when I was 11 was probably the last time I was properly dressed, Mark, and certainly right. The last time I had some hair. But this began literally a very normal English upbringing in the north of England. And I watched this film on Christmas Day when I was 11 about the real explorers who went to the South and North Pole, you know, Scott, Shackleton, Peary, Amundsen, all these incredible people. And literally I looked at it and said, right, I will become the first person to walk to both poles. And people have laughed at me ever since about that, and they still laugh, Mark. But guess what? In between, we actually achieved that mission. And it began very early on, and somehow I hung on to that dream. That was act one, the decision.
So talk a little bit about, you made the decision at 11, and you talk a little bit of how that dream developed. And, you know, you didn't just arrive at your first expedition. There was a lot of stuff that went into that and a lot of pain that went into it. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, a huge amount, you know, because I wasn't an explorer. I wasn't come from a family background of mountaineers and things. You know, my great-grandfather was one of the founders of KPMG, Sir William Peat of the Pea. So, you know, it was a bit of a shock to people when suddenly I was saying on a walk to both poles. People were quite shocked. And it was really a question of saying, okay, if I don't do this now, I'll never do it. And I was very lucky to be number seven, the youngest in the family. And all my brothers and sisters said, look, Rob, if you're going to talk about this for the rest of your life, which I was, you know, just get it going, start it. And I think that was a really sound piece of advice. There's so many people out there with dreams. I had a dream, but I was inspired to just get it going. So I went to university to keep my parents happy. get a proper job, Rob, was something they still say. My mum's 105 now, and she wow. still says, "Rob, when are you going to get a proper job?" But I started it. And I went to London. I live in the north of England, or not now, but I'm in California. But went to London, hired a small little section of a warehouse, and thought, you know, I can raise 5 million, which it would cost, to go to the South Pole. I could do it in a month. Mm. No. And I was on my own, and I had a job driving taxis on the streets of London at night. And in the day, I'd put the shirt and tie on and go and see people, Mark, and every single person for 5 years said, no, we won't support you, Rob, because you're going to go there and die. And the only sponsor I had in 5 years was a very generous company that sent me 2,000 cans of beer, which promptly I drank because, you know, I was pretty upset after 5 years of battling. And I think that what I learned in those ups and downs is that you have to listen carefully as to why people say no to your idea, to your dream. And you listen with respect and you don't get upset. And gradually, if you listen to all the reasons why people are saying no, you'll start to get yeses. And it took 7 years of my life to raise that 5 million, buy a ship, and then head off south to the Antarctic from London. Mm.
So talk a little bit, you know, when we talk today, we think of, you know, going and exploring, and, you know, all of us have a little device that equals any supercomputer that probably back then, but you couldn't just put Waze in, go get a map or your GPS on your phone or device. Talk a little bit about that, kind of when you, you know, started out on your trek.
It was quite extraordinary. You know, we arrived in Antarctica on a ship. We were dropped off, and we lived for 9 months, five of us, talk about isolation, in a hut. And then three of us stood literally on the edge of Antarctica. The South Pole's 900 nautical miles away, distance like Chicago to New York. And we're aiming for one building in the size, in an area twice the size of Australia, and the building's the South Pole Station. And if we miss it, we're dead. But we have no radio because they didn't work. We have no communications, no GPS, nothing, not a thing. So we have to navigate pretty much like Scott and Shackleton and Amundsen. We navigated using the sun, a sextant, and a watch. And we must be on target. So it was hugely, hugely isolation. It just brought in that sense of isolation that the real explorers must have had. You know, either you get there or you don't come home.
Yeah, and we've got some pictures where showing of you guys arriving and getting there. And talk a little bit about just some of the lessons learned during that expedition.
I think that a lot of us at the moment still are facing this thing of feeling trapped in with people. And imagine being in a hut for 9.5 months with four people that don't like you and you don't like them, because I chose really different, strong characters to make this expedition a success. So throughout those journeys, we learnt that really it's a good idea to tell each other the truth. Don't come up with a whole lot of bullshit, because eventually it's going to surface anyhow. So try and tell the truth. Try and listen, especially if as a leader, listen to what people are really saying to you. Not what you want to hear, but listen to what they're saying. And most importantly, before you want to kill each other, which we often did, try and use humor to diffuse a potentially very angry situation. Use humor to kind of level things out. And we use that on the journey. Imagine being in a tent with two other people for 70 days, wow, and you can just fit in like sardines. So I think that idea of dealing with isolation, dealing with people that are difficult, and I'm possibly a very difficult person, trust. You know, if you don't trust each other on a journey like this, you're going to die. because you have to really trust each other's judgment. And I think I learned that I really need to trust myself, which possibly I'd never done before properly. And if I trusted me, then maybe other people might trust me. And I think the other one, was to make sure that there was a sense of belief. Because Mark, imagine day one, you have 900 miles to go. Your sledge weighs 360 pounds. Every expert had said, if you're attempting the longest unassisted march ever made on the planet, you're going to fail, you're going to die. And on day one, you do 3 miles. And you've got to average 12. And on that day, you think, I can't do this. But you've got to hang on to that belief that you can and knock the thing down. And I learned this, you know, on a big issue, which you don't think you can do, knock it down a bit. Take it day by day, step by step.
So you get to the pole, you celebrate for a couple minutes, and then tell me what happens next.
Well, imagine we'd spoken to no one for a year. No iPhone 12 to ring up mummy, right? So we get to the pole, we're standing there at far south as you can go on the planet. It was a hell of a moment, I tell you. We'd done it. And out from the South Pole Scientific Station came the base commander crying. And I thought, you know, Americans are a bit emotional, but what's wrong with this guy? And he said, Rob, I can't believe I'm telling you this, that your ship, Southern Quest, sank, was crushed by ice and sank 5 minutes ago. Not 5 hours or 5 days, but 5 minutes ago. So this was a massive, massive moment. And actually, it wasn't that hard because everybody was safe and that's all that counted. But I'd made a promise, Mark, a promise to my patron, the great Jacques Cousteau from France. I hope some of the listeners will know who I mean. Possibly one of the first environmental leaders for the ocean. And he gave me credibility. And anybody's listening who's trying to get something going in life, you know that when somebody gives you some credibility, it's a big thing. But he asked in return for that, he said, Rob, when you leave Antarctica, take away all your garbage and equipment, leave the last great wilderness clean and tidy. I said, we'll do it. Get on the phone and help me raise some money. So the crunch comes when we're standing at the pole. I've lost the ship. It's 3,000 miles back to New Zealand. I don't have a ship. And I've got 60 tons of equipment in Antarctica. So I thought, damn it, we made a promise. Cut a long story short, it took an extra year. It took huge sacrifice by people to spend another year in Antarctica. But eventually we did that job. And we left Antarctica tidy. And I'm proud of that.
So you get to that point, and I'm sure, you know, you felt like you had accomplished a lot, but then you had the challenge or the difficulty. And I know we've got entrepreneurs that listen to the podcast, and yeah, and they're probably trying to build something, and we got smacked with COVID, stuff got shut down, and so you know what it's like to work through kind of that time of crisis and time where you don't have really a roadmap to kind of navigate. But talk a little bit about any other lessons that you learned during that crisis moment.
Well, I think first is that, you know, you stick to the damn plan. Because I think to gain credibility, and I was literally an entrepreneur of walking to both poles, not that it made any bloody money, excuse the language, but, you know, I was an entrepreneur. And what was I trying to do? I was trying to make sure that I built track record, Mark. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many words in this world. And I think that if you think carefully before you make commitments for your life, for your business, for our world, you should do them. Because if you don't have track record. So however crazy your ideas might be, like walking to the North and South Poles, a bit stupid really, but people, if you build track record, will listen to you. They won't if you're somebody that just does this and never does what you say you're going to do. So I learned that. And I learned that I wasn't on my own, where I felt like I was on my own. Guess what? 28 years old, walked to the South Pole, lost 69 pounds in body weight, so we were a bit messed up. And suddenly I've got a $1.2 million US dollar debt. And that's a lot of money today. Imagine that 30 years ago. And I've got to pay it off. But rather than feeling alone, I was able to pull in the people who'd helped me before, and they helped me again. And I helped myself to fight our way out of that debt. And then for some really stupid reason, decided it was time to go to the North Pole. Not the best financial decision I've ever made, I might say.
Well, talk a little bit about that. You've got a new, how long did it take you to prepare for that, that trek?
That was the dream, to do both poles, to become the first to walk to both poles. And, you know, being rather a poor business person, while I was paying off the debts, I thought, hang on a minute, maybe if we're going to be raising money to go to the North Pole, I can not just only reach the North Pole with the team, but I can pay off the debts at the same time. This was not the best decision I ever made financially, but I think I learned something regardless of having, you know, increased my debts, that I learned something that you've got to keep the momentum going in life. You know, you've got to keep the momentum going with your business, your plan. No one's really interested in what happened before. They're interested in what's happening now. And if suddenly you left 5-10 years between both poles, everybody would have forgotten. So within 3 years, we'd picked up the ball, and 8 of us from 7 nations now go to the North Pole, which is a whole different game. It's ice on the surface of an ocean. So it can break. You can fall into the sea. The South Pole was ice on land, ice up to 16,000 feet. So we now head north from the edge of the continent of, you know, North America, Canada, onto a frozen ocean. And we're going to walk every single step away from the safety of land into the middle of this, what we hope will be a frozen ocean. 8 of us from 7 different nations, lots of different issues about nationalities and language and patience and all kinds of, you know, new lessons that we learned on the way to the north.
So you're on this track and you're into it. How long? I know there was some challenges. All of a sudden you're facing something that wasn't, you know, most leadership is not life and death, but you've had some close calls. Talk a little bit about what you experienced.
This was appalling because, you know, I do not like walking to the poles. I can think of a hell of a lot of better things to do in my life than be at minus 40 degrees Fahrenheit walking 9 hours a day across rough ice. You know, it's not fun. And we're so nearly there. We're 100 miles from the North Pole after 900 to the south, 600 to the north, and 100 to go. And I'm thinking, yes, we got this. And remember, we're on this frozen sea. And in the middle of the night, we're all lying there, and suddenly the whole tent goes and it twists and jars underneath us. And we think this is like going to be a serious time. And it was. The whole ocean round us now breaks up into smaller sections of ice, smaller and smaller and smaller. We're 100 miles from the North Pole. No one knows where we are. All we have is a beacon that we set off when we hopefully get to the North Pole and an aeroplane will come and get us. We didn't want to set off that beacon 100 miles away. So we have a big fight through this breaking ice beneath our feet. And I think what I learned actually, which is a bit sad in life to know who you really are, And in my case, it's quite limited, really, that I'm not an explorer. You know, Scott, Shackleton, Amundsen were explorers. I'm not. And I'm too stupid, sadly, to be a scientist. And I'm certainly not an environmentalist. I'm not qualified. But what I realized when the ice was breaking up around us, Mark, that I was pretty good at staying alive, that I was a survivor, and that we had to march 40-hour days because it's always daylight at the North Pole in summer, and 24 hours wasn't enough. So we have a huge battle to get to the North Pole. Some people don't even still speak to me now, but at least they're still alive. And we reached the North Pole, and it was a great moment. And just as an aside, you know, you can't walk to the North Pole now anymore, 30 years on, because there is no ice. So what we experienced 30 years ago, you know, we didn't know what was happening, but it was the beginning of the Arctic Ocean turning back into an ocean permanently, which it nearly has.
So you get to the end of that that journey, and so, you know, what else could you do? I mean, what else could you possibly dream up? And
well, you know something, and I hope that I might be helpful to people that are going through that time of really setting something up and putting all they have into doing it. Ladies and gentlemen listening, you're going to achieve this. But mark my words when I say that often it's quite hard to achieve what you've dreamed of doing. And standing at the North Pole, I was really glad to have done it. I was never going to walk anywhere ever again in indefinitely. But it felt quite empty because I'd spent all that time to make this happen. And I felt very empty and I felt very low. And I hope it's not embarrassing to say, because it's not to me, but I found myself, you know, for about a year drinking too much because I couldn't face this hole inside me, which I seemed to, it hurt, it got to me. And I was lucky. It wasn't me that dreamed up the next act. It was Jacques Cousteau. And I went to go and see Jacques Cousteau. And he didn't say, you know, he's a Frenchman. He didn't say, oh, Robert, well done. You know, walking. He just looked at me and he said, what are you doing, young man, for the next 50 years? And at that moment, I knew that I'd found my next mission, because I am a mission type of person. And he said to me, in the year 2041, and remember, this was in 1991, the treaty that preserves Antarctica and leaves it alone for us all. Antarctica is the only place in the world, Mark, that we all own. No one owns it. In 2041, he said, Rob, make sure that we have the sense to leave one place alone on Earth forever, Antarctica, as a natural reserve land for science and peace. And I took that with, you know, an enormously big hug, because this was what, you know, moved me on, you know, from that day until now. I've never drunk anything, but that hole in me, I'll never forget. It was a difficult time. And we've been working for Antarctica now for 30 years, and we got 20 years to go until the magic year 2041, when we all must decide on the future of this beautiful continent.
Talk a little bit as you're have gone through, as far as kind of that next act, as you've put together kind of you know, teams and groups from around the world, and talk about that and what you're doing.
Well, I think that, you know, as with anybody, especially, you know, ladies and gentlemen, entrepreneurs, that, you know, you think you've got there. You know, I was the first person to walk to both poles. It's a pretty big thing to have done. I'm even in the Guinness Book of Records. You know, the Queen of England's given me lots of things for having done it. You know, a lot of people would say, well, okay, you know, I've done that, I'll write some books and, you know, talk about it. And I thought, no, that's just the beginning. And in order to preserve Antarctica, with no budget, by the way, no one gives me any money. Jack Cousteau promptly died, so I didn't have him to help me. And I thought there will be two ways to do this. And we've been working on this for 30 years. One, to engage and inspire young people across the world. From, I think we've got to like 83 or 4 different nations. And how would one inspire them? By taking young leaders, and occasionally the odd old leader like me, down to Antarctica. And we go every year. We're going in this November. And we go down just for a couple of weeks to learn about leadership and teamwork and sustainability and energy and the Antarctic. And those people go back home as champions to preserve Antarctica. So that's one way. The other way was to think, okay, why would people go to Antarctica? They go there for energy, for fossil fuels, for resources. So I thought to myself, and I'm a bit slow, but I kind of get there in the end. I thought, hang on a minute. If I could help us in the real world use more renewable, clean energy, use different types of fuels and biofuels and alternative fuels and synthetic fuels, wind power, solar power, all of that. If we can get that to scale, Mark, here, guess what? In 20 years' time, KPMG will save Antarctica. It'll be a bunch of accountants that do it. Why? Because they'll look at some balance sheet and just say, it's not worth going there financially per barrel of oil, per ton of gas, because we've got cheaper energy and it's clean back here in the real world. So we've worked really, really hard on the whole idea of testing, showcasing, renewable technologies, especially in some very, very harsh environments.
So talk about, you know, you've done the exploring, you've gone back, and talk about just some of the other things. Your story's not done. You've got some more trekking to do and things that that happen that most people wouldn't want to go through, but talk about that.
Well, I think, again, it comes back to remember the momentum. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I've been privileged to know some very, you know, outstanding English actors in my life. And all of them have given me that little piece of advice to say, Rob, you're only as good as your last film or your last play. You've got to keep the momentum going. So especially on the renewable energy side, Mark, I had no intention whatsoever of walking anywhere ever again. I made that clear when I reached the North Pole in 1989. However, enter my son, Barney, who's a radically different character than me. I'm, you know, a bulldozer that never says no and just keeps going, rather annoying to everybody. But Barney's sort of like everything I should be. You know, he's sensitive. He's quite spiritual. He really, really engages with the outdoors. You know, I'd be happy just to sit inside next to a warm stove for the rest of my life. And, you know, he had a bit of a battle being my son. It's not easy to be the son of some idiot like me. So he came through and he just said to me about 4 years ago, he said, Dad, we've got to go to the South Pole again and you've got to come with me. I'm sick and tired of being Rob Swan's son. I'd like to do my own thing in life and establish my own credibility. Will you come with me and walk to the South Pole? And I said, no, absolutely no. And he said, but Dad, what happens if we did this together only on renewable energy? And I said, okay, what route are we doing? And he showed me the route. And I said, well, actually, no, you know something, Bonnie? If we make this journey, it's only 600 miles. And if we make it together, it'll be the first ever expedition only to survive on renewable energy. Great for the 2041 story. But also, if I make it, I will have crossed the whole of the Antarctic landmass in my lifetime. And I thought, yeah, keeps the story going, keeps it relevant. So I agreed to do it with him. And it was incredible technology from NASA, who helped us build these incredible ice melting machines. One day they'll use them on Mars. And we off we went together. And you know something, I think it's so important that generations join together for any mission. You know, you can't have people of my generation, people of a younger generation not working together. And I was just fantastic to set off with my son to the South Geographic Pole, only 600 miles. I got it in the bag. It's nothing for a person that's walked to both poles. So I thought, Mark. And after 300 miles out of the 600, my left hip just says enough. And it disintegrates while I'm walking. I can't move. And I face failure. I've got to come out. And I have failed in everything in life. But I'd never failed to get to the pole when I said I would. And I'm leaving my son at 23 to fight on. You know, this was just terrible. And I had to deal with failure. And I'd never dealt with it before in that department. And it was awful. But Barney fought on, reached the South Pole. And it was wonderful to be able to just go in with my crutches to the South Pole and celebrate his moment. Nothing to do with me. He'd done it, not me. And that was just a very, very special feeling that I didn't matter much anymore. What mattered that it was the mission and he'd achieved that. So that was a bit of up and down at that stage, Mark, but it was a great moment, but bloody painful, I have to say, on the old hip.
But that's not the end of the story. And the story continues.
Unfortunately, yes. I this is where the psychiatric help may have to come in. So if anybody knows a good person that can help, that as you might imagine, I have to look at a map of Antarctica, and it's my joy to look at a map of Antarctica every day of my life. I'm trying to help preserve it. But I didn't want to look at a map of Antarctica thinking, there's only 300 miles left to reach the South Pole to cross the Antarctic. So I got my new hip put in and went back exactly this time last year to finish that 300 miles. And again, I thought, I've got this. It's 300 miles. It's nothing. And it was fantastic. I had two brilliant leaders, Johanna and Katinka from Norway, to the top class polar explorers in the world, joined by our brilliant cameraman from Norway, and off we went to the South Pole, those last 300 miles. And it was just fantastic. It was the first time I'd ever enjoyed walking to any pole, led by two fantastic women who just knew how to do it, and it was just great. 150 miles in. 200 miles in, and I'm thinking, I've got this. 97 miles from the pole, it's nothing. And I took my focus off. I started thinking about what it would be like to reach the pole, not what I was doing at that moment. Got out of the tent, tripped over a piece of ice because I wasn't thinking. And my brand new hip that had done so well, 200 odd miles, blew out of its socket. Mm. And I'm left lying there in the snow crying and feeling extremely sorry for myself, I have to say. Because when you go, and any entrepreneur knows this, that when you go to the South Pole, you don't just go back. You've got to raise $500,000 to go and do it again. So I got back home. You mentioned it. And I was feeling pretty sorry for myself, actually. And then COVID hit the very month we got back. And I'm a public speaker, international public speaker. And the public went and the international bit went. The business went to zero, nothing. Mm. And I've got a hip that's half fallen out. And I thought, hang on a minute, this is not over yet. And at the age of 65, I'm going back at the end of this year to finish those last 97 miles. And then I thought, no, this is a bit boring. You know, old English guy putting a flag in at the South Pole, it doesn't mean much. But I thought, what could I do to make it a better, more relevant story? So I pulled together a brilliant team of wounded veterans from the United States of America, women and men that have lost limbs for their nation in war. And they'll join me for those last miles. We'll get to the pole, and I hope have a great story of doing what you say you're going to do and having a little bit of resilience. And then, only then, I can bring my skis back home. You know, Mark, how people say they'll hang their skis up. I'm going to get a very large drill with some very big bolts and bolt the skis to the wall because they're not coming down again. It's time for some warmer weather from now onwards.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Your journey, and we're going to put some information available to kind of how people find out more about this next venture. But talk a little bit about, you know, outside of exploring, and I'm sure you mentioned warmer climates. So when you're not trekking through ice and snow, what do you do to recharge?
Well, I remember I'm an Englishman, but I live in California. I don't live in California just for the view. I live in California because it's nice weather. So looking out today, I see, beautiful blue sky. I was on Zoom with my mum this morning. I said she's 105. I said, "Mum, turn the camera around. Let me see the weather." And it's completely gray and pouring with rain. So I enjoy good weather. And I live in California. I live up in the mountains near Lake Tahoe, and I do an awful lot of road cycling. That's my passion, because when you get to my age and you've smashed yourself up as much as I have, cycling is really good because there's no pressure on your joints and hips and back and all of that. I am not much of a walker, I have to say. I've taken up, don't laugh, much to the inspiration of my son Barney, I've taken up stretching. I tried yoga, but it was such a joke. It wasn't funny to go to a yoga class. So I'm taking up solo stretching, which is a whole new thing for me, which I'm enjoying, actually, I have to say. cycling, stretching now, a little bit of weight work, not high, big weights, but obviously, you know, I've got to make it this time. It's 97 miles to the pole, and I'll be with a team which, you know, it's hard enough doing it on one leg. These guys and girls will be doing it, sorry, on two legs. They'll be doing it on one leg. So I've got to make sure I'm there. They'll probably be supporting me, knowing them. And I very much enjoy the ocean. And that's really the next mission, that, you know, in 3 years' time, it's only going to be closing in on 15 years to go until 2041. So I'm launching in 3 years a voyage on a yacht around the world to go and inspire young people, old people, governments, businesses, whoever it is, over a 10-year mission to go to as many countries as I can to get people behind the preservation of the Antarctic landmass. I'm going to take lots of tips from you, Mark, because I'm hoping to do a few podcasts from our yacht as we go and really smash it in to get people behind the preservation of the Antarctic. And then those last 5 years, where I'll be sort of pushing 80, I'll be spending time, hopefully, running a good campaign, because we've just got one chance, you know, one continent left, one chance to do it. And a lot of people probably listening are thinking, well, what do you think will happen, Rob? Well, I think what will happen if we're not careful, is a bunch of bureaucrats will go behind closed doors and make some decisions about Antarctica, which don't look too threatening at the time. They'll say, well, you know, we can increase a bit more fishing, or we can allow some exploration drilling or something like that. We can't allow that because, as you know, once you start something, it creeps closer and closer and closer to what you don't want to happen. So I'm hopeful that in 2041, at the worst, we can get this treaty extended for another 50 years. And then all the young people, hopefully led by my son Barney, will make sure that in, you know, 50, 60, 70 years from now, the Antarctic's preserved forever. But maybe we could get it preserved forever in 2041. And that's my goal, Mark.
Right. Well, this has been a lot of fun to hear your journey and lessons learned. And for all those that are kind of earlier in their leadership, I'm sure some of the lessons that you've learned are going to be applicable to their own situations. And how would somebody learn more about kind of what you're working on? And we'll have the information available on the screen.
But well, thank for those you very much. Thank you very much indeed. I think that, you know, before I tell you about that, I'd just like to say that I think one thing I've learned outside Antarctica as being, you know, somebody who's got to raise a lot of money, keep all the dreams going, Mark, is that if you're the leader and the firepower and the passion behind what you're doing, and you know where you're going, then it's terribly important that you don't just give one big speech to inspire everybody. Because you stay motivated, because you're driving the ship, you're running the ship, you're on the helm. But don't forget the people in the engine room who need, I think, two words which are important to me: sustainable inspiration. It's got nothing to do with saving the planet. It's got to do with sustaining their inspiration towards the mission. And I think I've managed to keep things going because I've always tried to do that. Very kindly to offer for more information, people can go on our website, which is probably too old fashioned, but we still got one, which is 2041foundation.org or robertswan.com. And, you know, we're going to Antarctica in November. We're always looking for young leaders, old leaders to come with us for a couple of weeks. If you'd like to visit Antarctica and help save it, please join us. And my son Barney will not talk to me for some time if I don't say this, please, Mark, is that I've joined this very annoying thing called Instagram, where, you know, all of this.
Right.
And I've no idea what it does, but Barney said, Dad, if you keep going at it, you might get millions of followers in 20 years time that might help save Antarctica. So my Instagram is Robert C. Swan, Robert C. for Charlie Swan. So Barney will now not beat me on the head with a frying pan. they're fantastic. And, you know, I live in California, and I hope, you know, when we've finished our last journey, the Undaunted mission that we're calling it, we might have another chat one day together.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I wish you continued success with all you're working on, and for the coming last part of your journey with, it sounds like a great effort, and looking forward to hearing how that goes. And yeah, stay out of holes and falling down, and, you know,
I will. I'll be thinking about it all the way there. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
Mark.
Absolutely.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.